Okay, I might go a little over. And our, huh? What do you say?
That's different. How?
Well, the reason I said that, I had two things in mind here, okay? And one was kind of like a continuation of what I had kind of mentioned about Daniel. But then I want to finish John chapter 6 too, you know, so I'd really like to finish John chapter 6 this morning. But I had mentioned some of this, and I kind of want to just maybe throw it out there as a seed of thought, or maybe get you interested a little bit. I had mentioned this thing about the gap, you know, and in fact, we'll go look at it a little bit, and then we'll go to John chapter 6, I think. But in Daniel chapter 9, and I love the book of Daniel. I've gone through it, and it's, I guess it could be a difficult book in a way, but in a way it's not, I don't think. Anyway, in Daniel chapter 9, verse 24, and I've read this in the past many times, but he says, I was reading about what, I don't know if you know who Ironside was. I found an article by him. In fact, if you bring it up on eSword, you can download Ironside's commentaries. And one of them is, he called it the great parenthesis, okay? I call it the gap, you know. You know what a parenthesis is? It's like a, you know, in these kind of brackets. And if you look it up in the dictionary, it means like an intermission, or not an intermission, but I had it written down too. somebody said something. Yeah. And I wrote it down too, and I thought I wrote it down on this piece of paper, but I guess I didn't. Anyway, I wrote it down somewhere. But, you know, like a intermission, I don't know if intermission is the right word either. I call it a gap, okay, a gap, okay. Anyway, and what he said was, if a person does not understand Daniel 70th week, the 69th and 70th week, this prophecy right here in Daniel chapter 9, if you do not understand that properly, you'll mess up on everything else, is what he says. And I agree with that, okay? And I think Daniel chapter 9, or Daniel is related to Revelation. In Daniel, he says, seal up the words of the prophecy. But in Revelation, he says, unseal it. Okay, and I want to touch on all of that, but it's going to take time to go through it all, okay? That's right, interlude or interval, right. And so that's what I'm talking about here. There's an interval or an interlude between the 69th and 70th week, okay? And if you make that run together, you'll mess up on everything else. Really will, okay? 70, and I'm going to read some scriptures in Daniel, and I'll tell you what Gil said about it, and you know, and you just look at it for yourself. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people. Now, who's he talking to? Daniel, right? Daniel, sir? 24, chapter 9, verse 24. I'm not going to read the whole chapter, but look. He says, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people. The angel is speaking to Daniel. Thy people. Now, who is thy people? Well, look back up in verse 20. And while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin, and Daniel was a righteous man too, and the sin of my people Israel, and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God. Yea, while I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation. And he informed me and talked with me and said, O Daniel, I am come forth to give thee skill and understanding. At the beginning of thy supplications the commandment came forth, and I am come to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved. Therefore understand the matter and consider the vision. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people. That's Israel. And upon thy holy city. What would that be? Jerusalem. To finish the transgression, and to make an end of sins, and to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the Most Holy. So a lot of things are said there, right? Now, we know when he says 70 weeks here, we know that's not 77 days, right? Right? Everybody understands that the word week does not mean 7 days necessarily. It could mean 7 days. The word week just means seven. So it could be 770 or, you know, 77s of whatever. And so they're actually years, and this can actually be proven. Okay. He says, look at 25. Know therefore, and I'm going to try to do this from a lot of from memory. I've got notes on it all, but I don't have my notes with me. He says, know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem, okay, and that was given by Assyrian kings. I can't also not. It was Cyrus. Cyrus. It was Cyrus. Okay, and there was a couple of commandments, but the one that fulfills this was at a certain time, and from when that commandment was given, okay, to the time that Jesus walked into Jerusalem on the back of that donkey, these weeks were fulfilled. Down to the jot and tittle from what I remember studying. And so look here. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem unto Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Well, that'd be 69 weeks, right? And so you find out that this falls out right when Christ came in and was rejected by the Jews, okay? And anyway, it says in 62 weeks, so it's divided into 7 weeks and then 62 weeks, which is 69 weeks. And so it says, "And the street shall be built again, and the wall even in troublesome times." And if I remember right, that probably has to do with the 7 weeks, okay? And so then look, and after 62 weeks, because 7 has gone before, and after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off. Okay, so Jesus Christ, after that 69 or, you know, 7 and 62, Christ was crucified after that came to a termination or came to finished, okay? And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. No, it was for his people, right? And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city. Now, it didn't say the prince that shall come shall destroy the city, but the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city. So it's not saying that the prince that's going to come, he's going to destroy the city. No, it says his people are going to destroy the city. So who destroyed the city? Well, you say the Romans destroyed it. That's true. The Roman generals and all that. But I also read, if you can go read in Josephus, I'm going by my memory too here, that the Romans used mercenaries. And that the mercenaries that they used were Arabs over there in the Middle East. That part. So that's the people. I understand that the Romans destroyed it, but they were the generals leading. But the mercenary soldiers were actually more Arabs. And the people that hate them today.
It's like making an example of who crucified Christ. I know it was the Romans that actually crucified him.
Yeah, but
it was the people.
The Jews that did. Yeah, right.
They were both
They're both killed. Yeah, so the Romans, Titus led to destruction, 70 A.D. It was Titus that led that whole thing and destroyed them. But they used mercenaries. I mean, you don't think all them soldiers came from Rome, you know? No, they were using mercenaries, you know? And so, anyway. But it says, and after 70 AD shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself, and the people of the prince that shall come. They are the ones that shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. So we know that actually ended up happening after the 69 weeks, right? Now it did, it was 70 AD, so the 69 weeks would have terminated 33 AD, right? Or 33 and a half AD or something like that. Christ was 33 when he first began his ministry. But when he came into Jerusalem, he was probably, was he 33 and a half there? I don't know. He was crucified at 33 and a half, if I remember right. So he began his ministry at 30. I'm sorry. So this would have been 33 AD, approximately, when the 69 weeks ended. And then 70 AD. Jerusalem was destroyed. But does that mean that the 70 weeks followed the 69? No. See, this is where the gap is, or the interlude, or the parenthesis is in between the 69th and the 70th week. Anyway, so it says here, and I want to cover all this in detail. In verse 27, it says, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. Now, some have determined, well, that's Christ confirming the covenant with the Jews. No. When did Christ ever confirm a covenant for 7 years? It was the everlasting covenant that he was part of. He never made a covenant with the Jews for 7 years. You can't find that. Okay? And anyway, it says, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. Now, this is the prince that shall come. Now the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city. But this is the prince that shall come. He's going to confirm the, and that word confirm really means, if you look it up, means make a firm covenant or a strong covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week, now the word midst means middle. You know, you meet, in fact, it's a word to translate median. When you go down the highway, what's the median? Right there in the middle, right? Median's not over on one side or on the other side, or, you know, it's right down, slap dab in the middle, okay? It says here, and we know that because we'll see times, time and a half, and all that stuff in relation to all this. But anyway, he says, in the midst of the week, in the middle of the week, after, it's a 7 year period, in the middle of the week, after 3.5 years, right in the middle, he shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease. So evidently this man, this prince, which is the Antichrist, I believe, is going to make a covenant with the Jews for 1 week. And he's going to allow or make, I don't know what I'm looking for, or make the offering on this temple. In other words, the temple will probably be restored, because would it, does it say over there in the New Testament, what did Paul say when he's going to sit in the temple of God declaring himself to be God? A lot to cover here, don't we? But anyway, so in the middle of that week, he's going to allow that, or make it available, or bring it about or something, because he's going to be in charge, you know, I guess. And I think he's going to be in charge by satanic power too, especially in the end of it. Because, I mean, he's going to work miracles and all that stuff. But, I mean, anyway, so, but in the middle of that week, he's going to stop it. And he's going to sit in the temple of God and say, I'm God. He's going to declare himself to be God. And if we go look at a lot of stuff in Daniel and other places, he wants to be worshipped as God. And we'll see it. Anyway, so he's going, in the middle of that week, he's going to cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease, and for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate. Remember Jesus said, when you shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, it's mentioned over here in Daniel, elsewhere in our later chapters in Daniel. It says here he's going to make it desolate even until the consummation. So in other words, he's going to stop that thing. He's going to make it desolate all the way to the consummation, till Christ comes and destroys him. And that determined shall be poured upon the desolate, or the desolator, as one interpretation has it. In other words, it's going to be poured out on the one that's making desolate, the Antichrist. Okay. Now, for a second here, look at Daniel, and I think we read this already, maybe a little bit. Daniel chapter 2. I tell you what. Yeah, we'll read that. Daniel chapter 2. Well, I said verse 32 and 35 I've got here. And I think I read this already. And you know about that image, right? The image of that Daniel saw, or that Nebuchadnezzar saw, I believe, and Daniel told him the interpretation of all that, right? This image head was of fine gold. His breast, verse 32, and his breast and his arms of silver. His belly and his thighs of brass. His legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Now we know from the interpretation that that image of gold was Babylon. Okay? You can look it up for yourself. The breast and the arms of silver was the Medo-Persian Empire. Okay? And then the Grecian Empire was the belly and his thighs of brass. The brass represented the Grecian Empire. Well, the legs and all of being iron represented the fourth empire. And we can go through all of Daniel to prove all that. Okay. But I'm just throwing it out there right now. He says, thou sawest, in verse 34, thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands. That would be Christ, his kingdom, which smote the image upon his feet. Why his feet? Well, that's weak, and also represent what? The end of the thing. You see what I'm saying? In other words, you got a progression. Gold at the top. Progression in time, right? Medo-Persian, Grecian, Roman, and then you get all the way down to these feet and toes and all that. Okay, now let's read about that feet and toes and all that. But you're right, it's what you said. It says in here, thou sawest a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Now listen to this. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together. Isn't that interesting? So there ain't no more remnants of any of this stuff anymore. You know?
Right.
I mean, you got
total
destruction of all the world empires, really.
Yeah.
Or anything that they may even represent. Because you read a lot about Babylon in the book of Revelation, don't you? Now, is that the Babylon over there and that's going to be rebuilt? Maybe. I don't know. Some people think that. Or it represents something else. I think that's probably more like it. And I think Mystery Babylon probably represents false religion and all that, you know. But anyway.
I think part of it also, Lucian, I think also part of that probably represents what has been built upon the area where the temple originally was built. The Dome of the Rock and all of those things have to be destroyed before the temple can be rebuilt.
And you're talking about probably the millennial temple more so than, I think the Antichrist.
I think it's going to be destroyed, and the temple is going to be built by the Antichrist before that.
Yeah.
The millennial temple will be where the.
Oh, yeah, it will be. Yeah, and I think as we read here, I think this is talking about Christ's kingdom here. Because look, let's read on. See what you think. Anyway, then was the iron, okay, broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. Gone. And the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. Now you can see remnants of this stuff even today. Okay. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Now, I don't think that's talking about Christendom today at all. Okay. Christendom today, you know, now maybe the Roman Catholic Church had that vision, but Christendom today hasn't destroyed all this stuff and destroyed all the world empires and made them like the chaff. Come on, really? Now, I know that Christendom has been preached in all the world, but look at the world. You think most of the world is Christian? Absolutely not. And anyway, he goes on to say, this was a dream. And you look it down in verse 38, thou art this head of gold. He told him that, right? And anyway, but look down in, let me go further down. Chapter 3, I had... Well, let me back up here. The legs of iron and the feet of... those legs of iron, if that represented the Roman Empire, well, the Roman Empire was back when where? When Christ was crucified, right? Now, it kind of gone out of existence, pretty much. I guess remnants of it. In fact, Hitler, he wanted to start the Third Reich. You know what the Third Reich means? The Holy Roman Empire. He was wanting to establish the Third Holy Roman Empire. He wanted to, you know, establish a Roman Empire throughout the whole earth and take over the whole world, and he was going to be the dictator of it. That's probably why some people thought he was the Antichrist. It almost kind of fits it a little bit, you know. But but this mountain that destroys the feet at the end, well, wait a second here. We got like 2,000 years gap in here. You see what I'm getting at? All of a sudden, this stone that hadn't even come yet is going to destroy this feet of iron and clay, and they're all part of them legs that have to do with the Roman Empire. So that's why the idea of the revised Roman Empire is taught, okay, or believed by, not by everybody, but some, you know, I think that's right, or something similar. That area, or any, you know, Roman Empire covered Israel and all that, all the way down to Egypt and all of that around the whole Mediterranean. That was all part of the Roman Empire. And as we study Daniel, I think, well, anyways, I'm getting way ahead of myself, okay? But anyway.
The Roman Empire had spread to all known areas that were currently populated at that time.
Yeah. The whole world, kind of like.
They were dominant.
I mean, yeah, right. I mean, I guess maybe over in the Far East, that, you know, they weren't, but, and I'm sure that, you know, they knew about the Far East at this time, but they didn't know about America or anything like that. But anyway, it says here in verse 34, that's where you see the gap, you know, until that the mountain that was without hands. But you look over there in verse 42, maybe. You can read 41. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of a strength of iron, forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with the miry clay. Now, some have decided this has to do with democracy and rulership mixed together. I don't know. I mean, they're trying to figure out what it means. I don't know what it means, but if you read down the rest of these verses, it sounds a little eerie to me. And as the toes of the feet were part iron and part clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken, as Brother Neil just mentioned. And whereas thou sawest the iron, sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. I have no idea what that means. But most think it is democracy and aristocrat or something like that mixed together. I don't know. I think they're reaching when they say that. But anyway. But they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. Babylon was left to Medo-Persians. The Medo-Persians was left to the Grecians. The Grecians was left to the Romans. The Romans was left to other people. But guess what happens? When Christ comes, he's going to set up a kingdom. But notice, it's in the days of these kings, which represents those 10 toes and everything, right? Those toes represent 10 kings. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms and shall stand forever. Now you got some time passing between these legs and when this happens. You see what I'm getting at? The gap. I forgot already what it meant. The parentheses, okay? The great parentheses. How long is this parentheses? I don't know. But during this parentheses, he's calling out the Gentiles. The church is in this parentheses. The church is never mentioned in the Old Testament. Paul said it was a mystery. Okay? And I want to cover all of that. Okay? Anyway, so this parentheses is between... right here. This parenthesis is between that 69th and 70th week. We don't know how long it is. I got a sneaking suspicion, maybe, and I don't think it proves to beyond a shadow of a doubt how long it is, but it kind of, I think it gives us a hint at it, maybe, but I'm going to get there in a minute. Okay, we may not even get to John the way this is. Huh?
I was
going to
say, probably
but I liked it. This is interesting. Isn't this interesting? It is very... And John, I love John. I want to finish John chapter 6, but this is so interesting to me. And, you know, I have wrestled with this since I've been a Christian almost, trying to figure this stuff out. And, this is the conclusion I have come to, you know, is the way I'm trying to present it. I mean, I had... Brother Jackie was trying to convince me, you know, I love Brother Jackie, but he was trying to convince me of amillennialism or gospel millennialism, whatever you want to call it, and I just could never swallow it, because I'd study this and I said, no, it don't fit. It's too much that don't fit. I understand how they go over there and back in Daniel chapter 9 and they try to make that Christ fulfilling that 70th week, but it don't. It just don't. He, Christ never, and you can prove it. I think you can prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt. Anyway, go turn to chapter. Well, I had chapter 7, verse 7 for some reason. Yeah, 7. And after this is talking about, now you're going to have to go back, we'll have to go back and study all this, you know, about these beasts and all that, you know, but the fourth beast, remember the first one was a lion, if I remember right? Yeah, verse 4 is a lion. That was Babylon, right? And then you had the second was like a bear, but this bear was raised up on one side because it was Medo-Persians. The Persians were more... powerful than the Medes, if I remember right, if I'm going by memory again. And so that's why it was raised up on one side. Okay, and it had three ribs in his mouth and all that. We can explain all that. I think that represented Babylon, Lydia, and Egypt from what I have on the side of my notes here. Anyway, and after this, beheld another like a leopard, and that represented Greece, Grecian Empire, okay? And which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl, and the beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to him. Now, I think in one place it talked about it having one horn, if I remember right. I'm trying to remember where that was at, which represented Alexander the Great. Maybe it's in a later chapter. Anyway, so these four heads represented Thrace, Macedonia, Syria, and Egypt. Okay, and there were four generals that were, and this is getting into a lot of detail. But anyway, and after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast. Well, what followed the Grecian? Roman Empire, right? Dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with its feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Whoa, sec. See here? Now all of a sudden we get into these 10 horns out of this fourth beast. But the fourth beast was the Roman. So wait a second. Now all of a sudden, 10 horns, 10 toes, Christ comes, destroys the 10 king, you know, all that. So here you go again. An interlude or interval. Parenthesis. Maybe I can stick with parenthesis. And anyway, so it was dreadfully strong, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were the eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Here we go. The Antichrist again, okay? He's yet future. So this right here is yet future, okay? I beheld till the thrones were cast down, verse 9, and the Ancient of Days did sit. It ain't happened yet. Whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like of pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fire stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. I beheld then because of the voice of the great words which the horn did spake. I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. What Christ is going to do to the Antichrist. You can compare that, Revelation chapter 19, etc. Okay. Now, and like I said, we'd have to go back through all this. Okay. I have another note down here, 7 verse 20. And of the 10 horns that were in his head. Now, this is speaking about the 10 horns and that fourth beast, right? Because look in verse 19, and then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, whose teeth were of iron and his nails of brass, which devoured, brake in pieces, stamped the residue with his feet. And of the 10 horns that were in his head, I want to know about all that. And of the others that came up, and before whom 3 fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints. Now, what saints here? I don't think it's the church saints, but that's my opinion. I think this is talking about the Jews, okay? All right, in my opinion, but anyway. Or the tribulation saints, if you will. I think there are people being saved in the tribulation, Gentiles and Jews. I ain't going to say that's not true. I think you can prove it. Because who are all them people that don't accept the mark of the beast? And that are slain. And they reign with Christ 1,000 years. So, anyway, got to cover all that, right? Got to explain it. I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them, until the Ancient of Days came. And judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down, and break it into pieces. Now look. And the ten horns out of this kingdom are ten kings that shall arise, and another shall arise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue three kings. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change the times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time, times, and dividing of time. What's that mean? Time, singular, times, plural, two. Dividing of times, half. There's your 3.5 years. There is your middle of that 70th week being divided in half, right there. Times, times, and half. And it says it in days elsewhere, all the places. Okay, but given into his hand until a time and times and dividing of time. But the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom on the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Sound like the millennial kingdom, huh?
And that verse is for the big-tribbers having their hats.
Right there.
Yeah. So that's right before Christ comes.
And
that's what they hang their hat on, that one verse.
Okay. Well, we need to cover all that, don't we? And I can understand some of what they say. You know, I can even understand what some of the post-tribbers say, but I think you can shoot it down. And maybe I'll get time to go to that. Okay. Chapter 8, verse 23. What did I say? Yeah, we read all that. Okay, so evidently that gap back there in that previous verse in chapter 7, I had it written down here where the gap. Well, you can see where the gap's at, don't you? You can see where the interlude or the parentheses of that. Chapter 8, verse 23. Anyway, now, before this, there's a lot, you'd have to read this whole chapter, and there's a lot of history going on, or not history then, but it's history for us now. You have Antiochus Epiphanes and all that that's being prophesied about here, but now Larkin says what is included here is not speaking about Antiochus Epiphanes, okay? In fact, maybe that's what I meant to say in chapter 11, but look at I'm right. Verse 23 and 25. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. That dark sentences mean hidden things. And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. It'll be by the power of the devil. And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and holy people. I think that's talking about Jews. I mean, mighty and holy people has got to be Israel here. I mean, the whole context of this thing is Israel. And through his policy also, he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. And he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall he destroy many. Notice that, by peace. He's a peacemaker. Shall destroy many. He shall also stand up against the prince of princes. Did Antiochus Epiphanes ever do that? But he shall be broken without hand. If I remember right, Antiochus Epiphanes was a I probably have it somewhere in my notes. I think he was, I can't remember how he died, but it wasn't this way. And the vision and the evening and the morning which was told is true. Wherefore, shut thou up the vision. But yet we read in Revelation to open the vision. For it shall be for many days. Notice that, many days. And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick certain days. Afterwards I rose up and did the king's business and was astonished at the vision, but none understood it. I'll seal it up. It's for many days, okay? And then we just already read chapter 9, verse 26 through 77. Okay. In chapter 8. I had a note down here. Larkin says that Antiochus did not live in the latter time of those kingdoms. Those kingdoms that are mentioned here, okay? And we had to study all that to make sure. But was the eighth out of 26 kings that ruled over Syria. So he was just the eighth out of 26. So he's not the latter. You see what I'm getting at? Larkin also says that Antiochus never waxed great. Okay. And in verse 19 of this chapter, we saw what shall be in the last end of the indignation. If you look back in verse 19 of that chapter, he said, he told Daniel, and he said, behold, I will make thee to know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed, the end shall be. Over and over, it just all fits, okay? In Daniel chapter 11, verse 31, that is speaking about Antiochus, okay? In verse 33 of chapter 11, I know I'm just skimming through this. Verse 31 speaks of Antiochus. I got a lot of notes in a gap in my margin here. Verse 31 is speaking about Antiochus. And the arms shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, and shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that maketh desolate. And if you know, remember Antiochus, he did do that. He took away the daily sacrifice and he set up an image of Jupiter, or I can't remember. I got it somewhere in my notes. Anybody remember?
I think you're right.
Oh, yeah. He might even offer a pig on the altar or something like that. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries, verse 32. But the people that do know their God shall be strong in exploits. And maybe that's speaking about time of the Maccabees, I can't remember. And they that understand among the people shall instruct many. Well, you know what? In Jesus' time, they did understand, and they did instruct many. Okay? Yet they shall fall by the sword. 70 AD. And by flame, Titus burned that place to the ground. The temple, he burned the temple down, and the gold melted and ran in the streets, in the cracks of the streets, by flame. By captivity, they were led away captive into all nations. And by spoil, that's right. How long? Many days. Many days. We're in that many days. We have been, this is the parentheses. Yeah, this is the parentheses, the many days right here. Here you go. There it is. And when they shall fall, they shall be helping with a little help, but many shall cleave by them by flatteries. And some of them of understanding shall fall to try them to purge and to make them white, even to the time of the end, because it is yet for the time appointed. The time appointed. Now what happens? Now what happens? After the parentheses. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god. Who's that? Antichrist. All of a sudden, you got the many days. Jerusalem was destroyed, held captive, all that. Many days, and then all of a sudden, you got this guy popping up. Because all of this has to do with Israel, the Jews, and the city over there.
has nothing to do with the church. Gentiles, all we just stuck in the middle here, okay, in this parenthesis. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. For that is determined shall be done. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers. This is why I think he's a Jew. Who are the fathers? He's not going to even regard. He's going to place himself above every god, even the idols. He's above every god. And I got a lot more to say about that somewhere in these notes. Okay. Nor the god of his fathers, nor the desire of woman, nor regard any god. I mean, even the pagans regarded some gods. Right? He's above that, man. I'm not regarding Jupiter or any of them gods. I'm above them all. It's quite a statement, huh? That's what it says here. Nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. But in his estate shall he honor the God of forces, and a God whom his fathers knew not, a strange God, shall he honor with gold and with silver and precious stones and pleasant things. Thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange God. Now I think this is satanic. This God is a satanic out there. Okay? I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that. I'm just saying, okay. There's a lot going on that we don't know about, you know. And so I think he's going to get his power from a strange God. That's what he says here. And thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange God, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory. And he shall cause them to rule over many. The strange God or whatever, I don't know. And shall divide the land for gain. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him. And we got to just say what all that is. I'm not, you know, I had it all figured out somewhere. Like a whirlwind with chariots. Now, is this real chariots or tanks? I don't know. I don't think they knew what that kind of stuff was. So, chariot just means a vehicle. And with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter also into the glorious land. And many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. And he shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver and of all precious things of Egypt. And the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy, and utterly to make away many. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. So what does that mean? Between the seas. Mediterranean Sea? Sea of Galilee? Jerusalem? Okay. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. And at that time, I mean, there's no sense stopping at 12. I mean, 12, there's no chapters in the Old Testament, right? And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time, Daniel, thy people, Daniel, Israel, Daniel, shall be delivered, every one that was found written in the book. I mean, gosh, don't, huh? It's an amazing thing, isn't it?
I think the important thing that you keep alluding to is the fact that if we don't accept that there's an interval between the 69th and that 70th week, one or two things has to be happening. Either the accounting for the 69 weeks, we've messed that all up, which there's too much Bible to back
that up. That's weeks of years. Okay, go ahead.
Or we're living in a post-tribulation period, which would counteract the whole New Testament and the church age.
Yeah.
You've got to accept that interval. There's too much Bible that's got to be
thrown out. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, this is where the doctrine of the preterist comes in. See, they think that Christ came in 70 A.D. And, you know, it's all done. Well, you know, and if the 70th week has run out, think about this. If the 70th week has run out, we'll read Romans. Well, we've got time, right? No, we don't, but we do.
Got all day.
Huh? We got all day, yeah. Really? We got all day. Romans chapter 3. Now think about it. If Daniel's 70th week, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and the holy, blah, 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 right? 70 weeks. Not 71, not 72, 70 weeks. If the 70 weeks are run out, what does that tell us? That everything concerning Daniel's people, Israel, has been done. God's through with them. In other words, that part's all done away with. I mean, it's done. He's finished doing that. But look at Romans chapter 11. See if I remember right where to go. Probably toward the end of it, anyway. Well, 25 is about where I want to read. Well, yeah, verse 1 says, God hath not cast away his people.
Right. We were
right.
We were not a replacement for this.
That's right. This is replacement theology is what some of these... That's right. Replacement. That book that we were reading, that had to do a lot with replacement theology. Okay. God hath not cast away his people. God forbid, for I'm also an Israelite. Now somebody said, well, you know, God didn't cast away because Paul was an Israelite and there were a lot of Israelites saved, so that just... But keep on reading. In verse 25, for I would not, brethren, that you be ignorant of this mystery, lest ye should be wise in your own conceits, that blindness in part, it wasn't total. Paul was a Jew. Apostles were all Jews.
There's a lot of Jews here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
them who believe correctly. Yeah, absolutely. Messianic Jews, we call them, right? Blindness in part, not total, has happened to Israel until... What does that word until mean? That means that the blindness in part is going to be taken away. Right? Blindness in part until... Well, it ain't in part no more, is it? Until... Blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. And so all Israel shall be saved. Now look at this. As it is written, there shall come out of Zion the Deliverer, Christ. And shall Christ, when he comes again and he delivers them, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob.
Israel.
No, Jacob. You know why I said Jacob, huh? It's Jacob's trouble.
Yeah.
And Jacob was renamed Israel after he was saved.
After he was saved.
That's right. So Israel is the name that God gave him. Jacob was his name, his fleshly name, if you will. Okay, I'm just best I can say it. He shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. Jacob's trouble, right? Jacob, we're going to read about Jacob's trouble. For this is my covenant unto them, when I shall take away their sins. Well, I thought their sins were taken away at Calvary. No, yes, in a judicial sense, but in a practical sense, they are sinning away. Right? When they crucified Christ, they were sinning away, right? And when they rejected him, and they've been sinning ever since. They have been rejecting him ever since. But anyway, for this is my covenant unto them, when I shall take away their sins. As concerning the gospel, there are enemies for your sake. Yes, they are enemies of the gospel. But as touching the election, they are beloved for the Father's sake. For the gifts and calling of God are without repentance. Which means he's not going to say, never mind, I'm done with them. You know, yeah, I loved them way back then, but you know, they have done so much, I'm just through with that bunch. So here he's going to take away their sins. They have been sinning for 2,000 years. But he's going to take it away.
He's not broken his covenant.
That's right.
They have turned their back on the covenant.
Yep.
Still there.
I want to go read one other place in Hosea. So we ain't got into John too much, do we? Anyway, Hosea, and you go read about that. The Lord told him to take a wife of whoredoms in the first chapter. And I think the reason for that was because Israel was playing the whore. So he said, well, go take a wife of the whoredoms. And I think what comes to pass in this first chapter about the different children that are born have to do with the more of a prophetic thing, okay? Because if you look at verse 9, then said God, call his name Lo-ami, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your God. But then look what happens. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered, and it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, there it shall be said unto them, you are the sons of God. I think they're speaking about the Gentiles. Okay. Anyway, but if you go on down, I think that's the Gentiles, but anyway, in chapter 2 he speaks, and I'm not going to go over all that, but in chapter 2 you can read it. It talks about the idolatry of the people. Okay. Chapter 3, we see many days mentioned. Look at chapter 3, verse 4. For the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king and without a prince and without a sacrifice. Been going on a bunch of days, hasn't it? Huh? I mean, they were offering sacrifices when Christ came. 70 A.D., that thing got shut down big time, right? Okay. Huh? I would say, without a prince, without a king, they ain't had a prince, they ain't had a king, they rejected a prince, and without a sacrifice, and without an image, and without an ephod, and without a teraphim. I can't remember what that is. Anybody remember what that is? Ephod was the garment that the priest wore, right? Or was that the... Yeah, the teraphim. You remember what that was? Oh well, anyway. Okay, many days, right? So you got a bunch of days right here, right? 70 A.D. I mean, boom, no more sacrifice, no more nothing, without all that. Many days. Afterward shall the children of Israel return and seek the Lord their God, and David their king, and shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. There you go again, huh? Got that parentheses right there between verse 4 and 5, don't you? It's all over the place if you really look for it. Okay? Now, I'm going to leave you with one more scripture, I guess. Chapter 4 speaks of God's judgment against the people. Chapter 5, more about the judgments against Israel. Then look at the end of chapter 5. Okay. The end of chapter 5, verse 14. Now, this is the Lord speaking. I mean, this don't sound good here. Okay. If you read up before this, you know, read about God's judgment on Ephraim and all that, you can go back and read that. For I will be unto Ephraim as a lion and as a young lion to the house of Judah. I will tear and go away. Notice that, go away. I will take away and none shall rescue him. I will go and return to my place. Christ went and returned to his place. They got destroyed in 70 AD. I will go and return to my place till they acknowledge their offense and seek my face in their affliction. Jacob's trouble. They will seek me early. Not I hope they seek me early. They might seek me early. They will seek me early. They will. Because when God brings them to their knees, they will seek him early. Look at verse 6. Come and let us return unto the Lord, for he hath torn and he will heal us. He has smitten and he will bind us up. Notice these words. Now you can say what you want about this. I just know 1,000 years is as one day, and one day is as 1,000 years with the Lord, okay? And after 2 days will he revive us. In the third day, the millennial kingdom, he will raise us up and we shall live in his sight. Amen. I just wonder. I'm just throwing that out there. After 2 days, he's going to revive us again. And it has been 2 days, brother. So I look for this thing to wind down, is what I'm saying, okay? I really think so.
I've been hearing all my life, we're living in the last evening, the midnight hour of the last day.
Yeah.
That late. It's not the end of the last day.
No, this is the way the end time. I mean, if that even is... If that means that, I'm not saying it does. I mean, I hate to be, because then it seems sound like your time or setting a date, and I ain't setting no date. I mean, 2,000 years is not setting a date. I mean, that's just a rough estimate, right? And if that's what that is, and you know, and it, guess what? It's been 2,000 years almost since Christ was crucified, and it's been almost 2,000 years. And is that 2,000 years or 360 days? Because prophetic days were 360 days, not 365 days? I don't know. But it ought to tell us one thing, huh? The Jews are over there again. They're in the nation again. They're getting all their stuff to offer sacrifices again. They're getting it all prepared.
Somebody said their material is already built for the temple.
Yeah, it's ready to go. Just the Antichrist has got to come on the scene, okay? Now, I want to get to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 has been used to prove post-trib. I went back through that verse by verse and examined it real carefully. And I do not believe that it's post-trib at all. And I can prove it. I think I can prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt. Or maybe not beyond a shadow. To my estimation, anyhow. All right. Well, it's to your estimation. Anyway, so we're quarter after. We did go over. So Breland said he wasn't going to
find out.
Huh?
They're trained.
Huh? That was pretty good, wasn't it? Huh?
Yeah. They have actually opened training schools for the priests out of the tribe of
Levi?
Yeah. They are already training up priests to start putting the sacrifices back on the altar. tells me a lot
where we're at. Yeah.
You know, when they feel confident that they're going to come over Jerusalem.
I've got something for you to think about. In the book of Revelation, we see the 24 elders pretty soon. Who are they? Who do they represent? Are they floating around, or are they in bodies? Yeah, they're in bodies because they have crowns, they cast the crowns, they're in white. Where do they come from? Okay? Just think about that. Okay, we'll get to it, all right?
I enjoyed that more than I thought I would.
Yes, indeed.